It's hour two of the 9 till noon show. Notice in from Donegal County Council. The council is currently working to clear an oil spill on the R236 between Convoy and Rafoe. Signs have been erected. People are asked to please drive with caution. That's the road there between Convoy and Rafoe. Caller says, I won 800 sterling in the UK lotto. Now we have to go to Wales to collect it simply because we live in the Republic of Ireland. Such nonsense. Any suggestions? Just wondering, is there perhaps an office in, I don't know if they have an office in Derry or Belfast or whatever, that you could perhaps travel there instead? I know the UK lottery used to be run by Camelot. Now, that's my recollection, but that's probably about 30 years old. So I don't know the situation, to be honest, caller. But if anyone can shed light on this, caller has won 800 sterling in the UK lotto. Is there any way of getting it other than travelling to Wales? Could the owners of concerts, owners or concert organisers, please pick up all the plastic cable ties, which have been discarded along the perimeter of the new concert grounds at Kiltoy, Letterkenny? As I was out walking in the area, I was shocked to see the amount of plastic cable ties lying along the pavement. Can they do something to clean that up, please? Caller says, I was out running this morning. I passed the grass roof building, the public services centre there. I was coming toward the Polestar roundabout to head back onto Port Road. I could see a man standing facing the trees. I thought it was strange, so I moved out on the footpath nearer the road. As I got nearer, I realised he was urinating in broad daylight in toward the bushes on Main Road. He zipped up, buckled up and walked on. I just stayed outside the footpath and ran past, but I just thought this is not what people need to see at 8 in the morning. It's a busy road. People going to work, kids in cars, buses, etc. going to school. Is this what our town has come to? And I don't think it's a regular, I hope it isn't a regular occurrence. I know there was a discussion about maybe trying to provide some form of more public toilets on the roads around Letterkenny, but no, that certainly is not what you want to see. People ask, how are people so blind to be supporting Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, who are hell-bent on aborting more and more babies? How is the slaughter of the innocents so irrelevant to society today? The right to life should be first and foremost, and that should be the policy influencing people's voting, so says Agora. What is the exact situation on the 29 houses in Carndonagh? All the public get is total waffle and rubbish from all councillors. Someone has to be held accountable. There should be a protest at the gates every day. Now, that'll be a reference to the houses in Carndonagh. Donegal County Council had been in discussion with the developer to take possession of the housing under a turnkey agreement and use them for social housing. We had a statement via Councillor Albert Doherty last week to say that the council had withdrawn from the discussions with the developer, and it was not at this moment on the council's plans to take those houses over. I know they're working on it, but it certainly is under discussion at the moment. That's all I can say to that. A lot of parishes have started shaking hands again. I don't think that's right, as COVID is still rife. I don't believe it's safe. I know what some parishes are doing is they're getting people to sort of turn and nod to acknowledge each other without, in fact, shaking hands. Perhaps that might be the way to go in the church setting. And just one more comment before we go. Connor is asking, can anyone explain how can people destroy their documents coming off a plane or otherwise and get past customs and to be allowed to stay in the country? We had to apply for a passport for our grandchild, who's only 6, and the passport office told the parents they could not get it in time. If they couldn't get it in time, they couldn't bring their child on holiday. And indeed, that is one of the issues that's being discussed at the moment when the government is talking about clamping down on people who are coming in without the proper documentation. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon today. Now, if you ask people to remember a phrase of Irish from their days in school, chances are at least half the people you talk to will say, and will Cadogum de la Mock of the Unlethras. We were fierce posh in Waterford. We didn't even mention toilets. We just said, and will Cadogum de la Mock, and left it at that. Joined on the line by Mary, whose child was seeking permission to go to the toilet and was refused. And it's a serious situation. So let's say good morning to Mary. Mary, tell us the story.
Hello, how are you doing, Donal?
Very well indeed, thank you.
That, some teachers allow children to go to the toilet while others don't. And the child is in another classroom now because moved up, and the teacher doesn't allow them to go to the toilet when they're asked to go to the toilet. And I think it's, in my opinion, it's not fair on the children.
I know more and more schools now actually have toilets in the classrooms themselves. Is that the case in this school, or does the child have to physically leave the room?
Now the child has to leave the room.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, so, no, in yeah, I know certainly in my day there was one toilet block serving, I think, five or six classrooms in the school I went to. It was a fairly large boys' school in Waterford City. And that was, I mean, you know, you would ask permission to go. Now, usually you would ask permission. Yeah. Are you saying this teacher basically, as a matter of principle, will not allow the children to leave?
Will not allow the child. It's ignored.
Yeah.
And an adult education, you're allowed to walk out. You don't even have to ask the teacher to go to the toilet.
Have you raised the issue with the teacher yourself?
I've raised the issue with nobody. I just thought I would speak to you
to see what's
the story.
It is an interesting one because, you know, I mean, certainly sometimes children, you know, may not have the level of... What age is the child in question?
Nine.
Yeah, well, sometimes, I mean, you know, and children are children and sometimes a child is going to get caught short. I mean, look, sometimes we all get caught short and, you know, we've all at one stage or other had to run unexpectedly. You know, it can happen sometimes at the most inopportune of times, but if the compulsion is there, the compulsion is there. I mean, it maybe is one to discuss. I don't know, is there a school policy on this, or it might be an interesting one to discuss with the teacher, but you're saying it's not the same. In some classes, the teachers do allow, in others, the teachers don't. It seems to change from class to class.
That's right, yeah. And I think every child should be allowed to go to the toilet, no matter what school they're in. If they have to go, they have to go. That's my opinion.
It's a very interesting one, Mary. I think it would be perhaps instructive to have a word, either, you know, have a word with the teacher maybe at some point if the opportunity presents itself, just to see what the situation is. I mean, I know in some cases children may have a medical condition. Is there a medical condition there or anything that might make the child want to go a bit more?
No, it's just different children. It's not just the one child. It's to all the children. None of them allowed to go.
Yeah. But there may be cases where some children may have, be it a diabetic issue or whatever, the children may need to go a bit more often.
I just thought it would raise the issue.
It certainly is an interesting one, Mary. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well,
do you have anybody on that would know anything about that? Or
well, one thing I've learned about the listeners is this program, they're a wide and varied group of people who know a lot about many things. So we'll put the call out there to our listeners. I mean, do any of the listeners have any perspective on this? Is there a policy with regard to this or what the situation is? Presumably then the reason you're raising this, Mary, is that the child's just gone back to school, started in a new class, and this has been dropped on you at the very start of the new school year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm all for this. Fairness for the children.
Yeah, well, it's a very good point. It's a fair point, and we'll put it out to our listeners. Another caller says, look, a child not allowed to go to the toilet, surely you approach the teacher or the school, not the radio, just my view. But look, in fairness, I think what Mary is trying to do is just to put the call out there to see what other people may think. I mean, I think it may need a chat with the teacher or with the school down the line, Mary, if that's the way you're feeling.
You see, Donal, it's better to put it on the radio because a lot of schools are doing this.
Yeah.
Not just one school, it's a lot. I've heard by different ones, a lot of schools are doing this. And I don't think, in my opinion, it should be allowed at all. The child has to go to the toilet, they have to go to the toilet.
Well, the other question is, I don't know, is there any form of national policy or schools given guidelines on issues like this? Are there health and safety provisions in any of the documentation that sort of reference this? As I say, I don't know, but if anybody out there does, please do get in touch. Mary, thanks indeed for giving us the call.
No problem. You're very welcome, Donal.
Okay, look, Mary, you look after yourself and all the best to you. And hopefully the school, apart from this, the school year goes well. That's Mary there. And asking a really interesting question. I mean, the teacher in this instance does not allow children go to the toilet if they ask. Other teachers do allow it. Does anybody out there have any perspectives on that? Staying with a sort of an educational theme, just an email that we received. We're wondering if this could be raised. We're fighting with Bus Éireann at the minute to extend the Bus Éireann school route, but they won't budge. There are multiple families affected by this, working families. Children attend Educate Together school. They've just gone into first class. The bus pickup is at 2:40. The bus route takes them to the mountain top, but it will only go as far as the Thornbury estate. It goes to the top entrance and then out the bottom. We need the route extended so a child can get to a creche at Fox Hills. in the Pine Hill Industrial Estate. This is adding 5 minutes to their journey, and it's not going out of their way. If they're going to the mountaintop, all they have to do is just go up a little bit further, go to the roundabout and do the turn and drop the child off to the creche. It's having a massive impact on families. I'm a single parent who's working full time. I have no alternative pickups for my child. The other parent is in the same position. We've tried every other bus company and taxi service, have had no luck whatsoever, other than a bus that would cost €350 for the week if we got 16 children to fill it. We want to address the situation and speak up in the hope that others will be of assistance. I have been emailing Bus Éireann from the beginning of summer, but they're giving useless reasons why they can't accommodate us. One being that the childcare workers don't come out to the bus to get the children off, which is nonsense because they always do, so says our caller. The caller is basically saying, and it's obviously we're in the mountaintop in Letterkenny ourselves, so I know well the areas the person is talking about. Thornbury is an estate that's, okay, it's perhaps 5-6 minutes walk away from here, and you might say, grand, look, it's only a bit of a walk up the hill and you're at the creche, but the parent isn't all that happy about their child getting off a bus. We don't know what age the child is. Parents not happy about the child getting off the bus, walking up the footpath from Thornbury up into the Pine Hill Industrial Estate and over to the creche in question. Now, it would not necessitate crossing. I will say this, it doesn't necessitate crossing any busy roads. So it isn't as though you would have to cross the road, because it's on the same side. But that's the parents' concern. Have you any perspective on that one? In relation to National Slowdown Day, which is today, Cotter says there needs to be something written into the rules of the road that the faster you go over the limit, the bigger the fine and points, and everyone is treated the same. I think it's time for zero tolerance with speeding. Now, younger people would think twice before speeding if they knew the punishment beforehand. 40 kilometres over the limit, 4 points, and a €400 fine, and so on. That's an interesting perspective. As a mum of two, there was a discussion on the show last week about dirty water, and Cotter says, yes, once upon a time we had many illnesses spread by dirty water. Now they've vanished due to our collective will to treat our water. Air should be no different. Our children shouldn't be subject to repeat infections and associated harms in the school setting where they have no choice but to be. And that's a discussion on clean air. Another caller says, thank you to Dr. Keira. Of course it's a good idea to clean indoor air. The benefits are enormous and negatives are zero. Nobody debates the importance of clean water. Why don't we similarly demand clean air? I am sick. Kids being sick. HERPA filters are proven to reduce sickness in classrooms. They are cheap to run and effective. I don't understand why schools aren't running these in every classroom. We live in an era of airborne disease. I don't accept anymore that we have to accept kids getting sick and diseased. We have to adapt. And I suppose, yes, if there is technology available which is going to improve our children's health, we should be striving to use that technology and avail of that technology at every possible opportunity. Again, in relation to the quality of air in schools, fantastic to hear this speaker, so refreshing. I'm fed up with this negative, well, we just have to get used to being sick approach. It's ableist and defeatist, specifically the now debunked herd immunity argument. There is no herd immunity in coronaviruses. We've let COVID spread so widely that it continues to evolve faster than our immune systems adapt. Historically, we've not strived for herd immunity to dangerous viruses by mass infection. Think about measles, polio, TB, etc. We achieved herd immunity by vaccination, and the reason is because of the harm each infection can cause with regard to long-term health. Over 400,000 peer-reviewed studies highlight the long-term impact of COVID, and we know children are equally impacted. Prevention should be a core government strategy, and clean air is essential to this. Another caller is saying it's vital parents realise there is no such thing as herd immunity. It's a very similar email to the last one. Of course, children will pick up bugs at school, but parents shouldn't accept the ones which are capable of causing chronic illness or long-term organ damage. My teenage son has been left with an autoimmune condition, including headaches and fatigue, after contracting COVID-19, and I believe that my child contracted COVID-19 in school. Again, that's a repeat of a earlier comment. In 2019, caller says, Ireland had the fourth highest rate of asthma in the world. Improving indoor air quality in classrooms should have been done for that reason alone. Several COVID infections a year forever for all the children in the country is not going to help the asthma situation, nor will it help the type 1 diabetes situation. We've been warned by NIAC and the German health minister, for example. New build schools are getting MHRV apparently, so they'll be in line with the HSA code of practice. It's been in force since May 2023. That code of practice requires that action be taken so that levels of CO2 cannot be above 1,000 ppm. Action such as installing HEPA filters is vital. I own a CO2 monitor and I found it's regularly 2,000 plus in my daughter's school, newly built in 2019 with no ventilation system. Again, caller saying, great piece on clean air. You have to be a bit mad to be against clean air in schools or hospitals. You never hear anyone saying they love that groggy feeling in the afternoon with all the CO2 build-up. Adults hate it. It's only logical that kids would feel the same way. Caller asking, why does Donegal GAA not accept cash at matches? It's legal tender at the under-16 county finals yesterday. They wouldn't accept cash at the entrance. Before we go for a break, just one or two requests. Georgia Thornton of Killyclug, Letterkenny, in school in Ballyrain this morning. All the best from Granny and Grandad Kilpatrick. And to Mickey Callaghan in Grove Hall, Remelton, who celebrate his birthday yesterday. Belated happy birthday to you, Mickey. And that comes from Dennis. It's the 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio. Colin David Crooks has retired after serving 40 years in Tiboyne, the third longest serving rector of the area, including Craig Aduish, All Saints, Newton Cunningham and Killay. Reverend Crooks joins us this morning. Reverend Crooks, good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Reverend Crooks, first of all, we wish you all the best in your retirement. You've served in the area.
Thank you very much.
You've served there a long, long time in that area of Tiboyne, all around Newton Cunningham, up to Killay, over toward St. Johnson, that whole area. Yes. It's an area you've come to love.
Oh, very much. Wonderful people. Lovely countryside. And it's a beautiful place to work.
You served a time in... you were ordained in Letterkenny in Conwell Parish Church, where your own father, Archdeacon Crooks, was rector back in the day. So the association with Donegal goes back a long, long time.
Oh, no. I grew up, of course, in Letterkenny. And apart from being out of the county for a few months or years in Derry and in Edinburgh, I've lived here ever since.
Your ordination as a deacon in Derry in 1977 and then as a priest in 1978. You've served in the Northwest. You'll have met lots and lots of people, but one of your commitments and one of the things that you're remembered for and will be remembered for is your commitment to ecumenism and bringing all the churches together.
Oh, very much so. Well, that's the thing we do together. No individual does that. Particularly in the Newton Cunningham Interchurch Committee and Interchurch Housing Association, which Father Kevin O'Doherty started up when he came here in 1990, and it led to the creation of Trinity Court on the Banfad Road in Newton, 34 sheltered housing units, and has been the most wonderful achievement, and I've been very proud to be involved in that for so long. And it's now Theresa McGee is the manager of it, and we've got the staff there, and it's just a wonderful achievement. And it was the prophetic visionary Father Kevin O'Doherty got us all together to do that. It would never have been achieved without somebody like that.
Mm. And that's very much ecumenism in action. It's not
totally.
Just talk, it's actually action.
As
yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Yes. Three in one.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And there's a whole dimension to that, indeed. Made real on the ground, as it were. The people of the area, of all denominations, always appreciate that. And it's always been a hallmark of that area, too, that irrespective of your faith, irrespective of your denomination, everyone was welcome in everyone else's home.
Oh, totally, absolutely. Naturally, it's Christian hospitality.
The other interest you have that a lot of people will know you for, and indeed it's one that we've discussed with you in the newsroom here at Highland in the past, is your interest in railways, and in particular, your interest in the restoration of railway services to this region.
Yes. I'm not interested in railways as such, old steam engines, that kind of thing. It's getting a railway line restored to the northwest, a western rail corridor from Derry to Cork, and a line from Letterkenny through Omagh to Monaghan to Drogheda, Dundalk, Drogheda to Dublin. That is our campaign. And I think it will be done eventually, but in the year 2050, when I'll be 98, I must try and get it going much faster than that. And we've got wonderful people working on it, and it is going to be achieved. I've no doubt about it.
The recent publication...
that Donegal should be properly connected to the rest of the country.
the recent publication of the All-Ireland Rail Review obviously has made that a lot more real. It must have been gratifying for you to see that vision actually written down in paper by the experts in that context.
Yes, but that's the first step. The next one is getting tracks on the ground, sleepers and so on, getting at it, getting the money, and that might take years. Writing it down is one thing, getting it put in practice is another.
And
we're never going to get this.
Yeah, indeed, that has been a major discussion on this program. Dr. Joe Kelly put forward his view that he believes this review is going to prove to be a lot of words with not much money and not much actually action to back it. Your hope, obviously, is going to be that won't be the case.
May I use the opportunity to thank Highland Radio and all the local papers and press for their support of this campaign, their publicising campaign, and it is a great help.
You also have an interest in travel, and you have travelled a lot around the world, and you're hoping perhaps to get to do more of that now in the coming years.
I've never been to South Africa or Japan or South America, so I do that. I've been to Madagascar, where my brother-in-law, Bishop Hall Spears, was bishop, and he was with me yesterday for my final service. I've travelled a lot in America, Canada, China, a few places like that. I don't brag about my travels, but I've been to these places.
And
I remember indeed in 1980 when, before the fall of the Berlin Wall, much to my father's consternation, sitting off with some friends in a little car, PZP200, to travel to Bucharest and Budapest and Sofia and these places. I'm getting arrested every now and again and going hours through these borders. And then another time in dear old 6317IH, travelling to Warsaw and Berlin and these places, and Prague, those are the car numbers, just by way of interest, Donegal numbers. But travelling in those countries was interesting just because they were so underdeveloped, and I think they had every bit of the same right to have visitors as the French and Germans. It was interesting going to these historic places. So I enjoyed all that very much.
Well, your other interests is music, and it is not unusual for you to sit behind the organ at the Church of Ireland in Newton. Will we get to hear you play more in the coming months and years?
Oh, probably not, no. Just playing hymns in church. I have an organ in the house here, and I enjoy playing music. But I prove beyond any doubt when I try that my bark is worse than my bite.
Well,
but it's all very good. It's a hobby, and I enjoy it very much, but I'll never be giving recitals, that kind of thing.
Well, anyone that can play a Bach prelude is a friend of mine, as far as I'm concerned. Reverend Canon David Brooks.
We're not friends yet.
we wish you all the best in your retirement. May you have many happy years. And I look forward to sitting beside you on the first train from Letterkenny to Dublin via Oma and Portadown.
I hope it'll not be in the very far future, but thank you very much. And thank you again for your support of that campaign. And you'll be hearing a lot more from us. And very grateful. Very nice to talk to you today. And thank you very much. For your warm good wishes, Donal.
You too, Canon Crooks, and we wish you well.
Thanks.
That's Reverend Canon David Crooks there, who celebrated his last service yesterday in Newton, and he's been campaigning for a rail service in this region, and he will continue campaigning for that service, I strongly suspect, for many years to come. And as we said, may we get to a point where we do actually get to sit beside him on a train. Okay, let's go from Canon Crooks over to Ards Forest Park and rejoin Greg Hughes. Greg, good morning.
Thank you, Donald, very much. You're joining us, unfortunately, up quite a... where's my camera gone? 1 second.
Yeah,
joining us quite a steep incline, which is not ideal. But I'm joined by Peggy Stringer. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Heavy breathing?
Heavy breathing. We went up just a wee hill, but it's all right. It's beautiful. It's Ards Forestry, so nothing could be nicer.
Well, if this is easy, in fairness, now we're reaching the brow of the hill, so it's not too bad.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Malinhead yesterday was a wee bit more difficult.
And the jury's still out. I think tomorrow, as it relates to the Arugal climb, a call's going to be made on that at lunchtime.
Yes, I do think that I believe we will be erring on the side of caution. And I think that there's no point in getting up at 2:30 in the morning or 3:00 to climb Arugal and see nothing. I think we have clouds coming in, and for safety reasons, I think we will probably, John will call it at lunchtime, but little bit of inside information, I think it will be a 10 o'clock start.
Well, we got today going anyway. Come here. The target this year to raise money through the Donegal Camino is €100,000. And you're confident you will reach that target. It really is quite remarkable.
I am more than confident. We are nearly there. We have got such support, even since before the Camino, the build-up to the Camino, and with everybody that's joined us on the Camino, they're bringing money, the locals are giving. Even when we were out last night, two people came up to me and handed me envelopes. You know, it is so supported, and I know that we will make our 100,000.
And it's been an amazing progress in an upward direction, hasn't it, in terms of monies raised from where it began to where it's going?
Yes, in 2020, we started with 6,000. 2021, when it became official Donegal Camino, it was 6,000 the first year, 20,000 in 21. We had 50,000 in 22. We had 82,000 last year. And this year, trust me, we will make 100,000. And anybody out there that still hasn't donated, put your hand in your pocket and we gladly receive it. It's all for Cancer Care West in Letterkenny, for anybody in Donegal who's affected and using the services of Letterkenny. It is an amazing charity and I'm so proud to be part of it.
How would you describe, in your words, the services the charity provides?
Because I live in Dublin, I'm not on the ground. And
hurry
I'm
up, there's a big steep hill coming.
Okay. Because I live in Dublin, I'm not as familiar, and I haven't, thankfully, needed the services, but I know plenty who did, and continue to use the services. And they have nothing but the highest regard, respect, and the treatments they get is all part of the recovery.
Yeah, indeed. And listen, obviously loads and loads of people are supporting the Donegal Camino and in turn supporting Donegal Cancer Care West. If you want to donate through us, and we'd love to be able to present a lovely figure, and we can already actually, thanks to the generosity of people, but there might be still some money out there, and if you can donate, please go to idonate.ie/Greg Hughes or give us a call on the radio station, and you're encouraging people to do so?
Yes, absolutely. Dig deep. We all need it in Donegal, and we are so, the service looks after everybody from start of their journey to the end. And we are, what we do here is, I was a nurse one time. I used to nurse the terminally ill, and I walked with them, but now I'm walking for them.
Super stuff. Well done to you. So it's idonate.ie/Greg Hughes, or you can give us a ring at the radio station 074 91 25,000, 074 91 25,000, and if you can, please do, and we'll chat to you maybe before the end of the show, Donal.
Okie dokie, Greg, great to talk to you, and keep going, you're looking good.
Thanks.
I see the coat's gone. I look forward to seeing you in just a t-shirt the next time we see you.
Well, you might see me naked at this stage, Donal. It's very, very warm. The cap is also holding temperature in, but it's all right. I can breathe again now.
Are you doing well? Fair play. Keep it going.
It's a tight walk. It's just, I don't know where we just walked up, but it's a tight walk.
Oh, it's a lovely walk, right, though. I have done it now. That all that area around Ards is lovely.
But it's my first OB walking up that hill.
Fair enough. Never walked it while carrying out an interview at the same time. That is fair enough.
No, because I'll tell you why. Because when you're broadcasting, you breathe a different way. At least I do, and it doesn't really work well with steep inclines.
Yeah, but anyway, probably.
We're here. So idonate.ie/Greg Hughes, or give us a ring at the radio station. We can process that. I mean, maybe we can contribute, 5 or 6 or 7% to the overall total, and I think that would be an absolutely remarkable thing. People have been so generous so far, but we'd love to be able to extend that generosity. And look at all the people, Donal,
absolutely.
Here. It's a huge turnout, a sea of blue, and the form's good. The buzz is good. It's a really nice atmosphere, I must say.
Excellent. Great to see. Greg, we'll talk to you again in the next hour. In the meantime, keep it going, and congratulations to all involved.
All right, Donal. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Greg.
You too. Bye now. That's Greg there, and everyone walking at Ards Forest Park in support of Cancer Care West, and it's great to see it. Just a few of your comments before we go for a break. Does anyone know if the static speed cameras are fully functional yet on both lanes going out and coming in on the dual carriageway at Manor Roundabout? I see there are new lines on the road. What is this? Last Friday, I phoned Donegal County Council regarding a house with dampness. I was told they were out before and nothing could be done. Just open the windows, etc. in the middle of bad weather. Open the window in the main bedroom and the bathroom. Black on walls, no other rooms. It's a council house. Who do we turn to? Council say it's our fault. The caller says, I was at a funeral service where the priest asked the congregation to offer the sign of peace. I understand this practice was dead and buried. It served no purpose as it meant nothing. It was just a medium for spreading bacteria and infection. Why are the clergy so infatuated with continuing this silly charade? As I said earlier, I mean, I know in at least one church, what we do is people will turn and nod to each other. So it's an acknowledgement without actual physical contact. Another caller says, I see a lot of talking about overgrown hedge bushes, briars, etc. along the roads, all the dangerous near hits and near misses as well. The season has opened. It's time to get at this work and get the roadside safer. We are joined in studio by Matt McGranahan, who is a violinist, fiddle player, one of Donegal's foremost musicians, and also led a campaign over COVID for proper payment rights and recognition for musicians. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Now, Matt, you have been in the news yourself over the past while because of what could prove to be a landmark Work Relations Commission, given the definition of your employment. You played for 8 years between 2014 and 2022 for a musician, Michael English. Tell us the story about how all this went, sir.
Towards 2018, I became aware of this phenomenon or name called bogus self-employment. And I just started to figure out that a lot of what I was reading about it seemed to apply to me. I started researching it. When the penny dropped with me, I actually started campaigning very, very, very quietly, very privately with some politicians around the country, trying to explain to them that I think this is one of the biggest threats to the music industry. And try to campaign to actually change legislation, create legislation to draw a line in the sand and go beyond that. But over the course of a couple of years, I realised that nobody could see maybe the potential disasters that I could see with it. So I thought, I'm going to have to prove this in order to try and
something of an ironic piece of naming, that this is referred to as the gig economy.
Yeah. But I think what I've been working on this over the past few years with an incredible campaigner, Martin McMahon, who has been fighting bogus self-employment for 25 years. I'm only coming into the scene quite late. But we have been working tirelessly to try and prove that there is no such thing as the gig economy. Supreme Court decision by last year in the famous Carshan case, it was the landmark case. There's been two landmark Supreme Court judgments on this issue, one in 1997, which has been largely ignored by the government, the Department of Social Welfare and Revenue, and more recently, the Carshan case last year. My case with the WRC, it's really one of the first times that the WRC has really put into effect. So we're starting to see the everyday effects of Carshan now on a legal opinion like this.
One of the arguments that would have been made by your erstwhile employers is that you were employed on a night-by-night basis. If there was a tour, you were employed for the duration of that tour. If there was studio work to be done, you were employed for the duration of that studio work. You were paid individually for each individual piece of work. So you weren't on contract, you weren't in full-time employment, you were hired when and as needed. Your argument is that that is not the case, and the WRC has agreed.
Well, it's not my argument, it's the five steps, and the three key questions set down by Carshan. Before Carshan, we were making all the arguments to social protection as well, because what started the ball rolling on this, if you believe yourself to be bogus self-employed, you need to get an insurability of employment status. So you go to the Department of Social Protection, to a unit there called Scope, and they do an investigation. Mm-hmm. I did this back in 2020. They ruled I should have been an employee. It was appealed to the Social Welfare Appeals Office. I didn't partake in any way with that appeal because Social Welfare Appeals Office did not supply me with test cases they have previously used. The Minister has denied that they have used test cases. The Social Welfare Appeals Office has confirmed to me that they used test cases. In fact, it has been confirmed by every Secretary General and every Minister since 2000 until 2019 that test cases have been used. But suddenly they've changed the angle on this. So we were making all these different arguments But as you said to me, that and when you said that I was getting paid per gig, I was getting paid for every bit of work. Every employee gets paid per hour, per piece that they do, per day, per whatever.
Maybe the the argument may be the difference between you and I is, as well as being paid, my employer takes care of income tax, my employer takes care of USC.
Correct.
I'm paying USC, I'm paying income tax. You weren't, so presumably I will have rights in the social welfare system that you don't because you weren't paying USC.
Correct. Well, no, I was paying USC because being a self-employed person, I filed filed Form 11, pay under Schedule D. I'm paying PRSI Class S stamps as opposed to PRSI Class A. But all those things that you're saying to me are not determining factors of my employment status. They are a consequence of bogus self-employment. They are a consequence of illegally misclassifying workers as bogus self-employed, as self-employed. Because here's the kicker. It's worth about 25% or more of savings to an employer to illegally misclassify someone as being bogus self-employed. You don't pay PRSI for them. You don't pay their income tax. And most importantly, you don't give them any rights. And this is what it's about. It is about financial terms, what it's about to the economy, how it's stripping at least €1 billion a year from our state, from our services. But it's more than that. It's taken workers' rights, human rights. Let's be honest here. Employment rights are human rights as well. And it's stripping that. And if any industry or any sector or any business can only survive on the exploitation of workers, then that's not something that should be supported. It's not something that should be allowed to happen either. And another thing, businesses in this country, as we know, are getting it, you know, really tight at the moment. And every business that's running really legitimately in this country, a small coffee shop, a corner store, retail, hospitality, they're employing staff and they're paying Class A PRSI and they're paying income tax and they're giving those workers their employment rights. Between social welfare and revenue, and this, the government, not this government, but the government for over 40 years, has enabled and allowed bogus self-employment to happen. It is illegal state aid. And those businesses and those industries are getting away with this. And if I was running an ordinary business or another business in this country, I would be shouting and screaming up and down why they're not getting the same tax breaks as what other sectors are getting through bogus self-employment.
Up until 2018, when you began to look into this and you began to consider your own situation, how would you have defined yourself? Would you have, if someone asked you, can you do a gig? If someone asked you, will you do a concert? Would you first have said, oh, I have to double check. Am I doing something for MEPC Music that night before I can say yes?
Correct.
Effectively, would you have seen yourself first and foremost as committed to MEPC
Correct.
Music as their fiddle player, and then anything else was on top of that?
Yes, and that was the expectation as well. I'll be honest with you. I had private conversations in 2019 with Paul Claffey about employment, and I asked him to make me an employee. He says it wasn't on the cards, and he said that, you know, look, he says, you're free to work with whoever you want. I said, so if I get an offer now next weekend, you know, for more money to go next Saturday, well, he says, not next Saturday. You know, on your nights off, you're free to work with whoever you want. Everyone's free to do what they want on their nights off.
Yeah.
You know, so there was that expectation. And the business that we're in, the music industry, and it's not, listen, this is not just the music industry. This is, again, another consequence of bogus self-employment and how it works, is that there is that expectation of loyalty and of obligation to fulfill your duties. And if you don't, you know, you don't have the employment rights. So there's a fear element that if you don't supply your duties or supply your work, that you could end up being jobless the following week, you know. So bogus self-employment, it has all the advantages of employee status for the employer, and all the trappings for the worker.
And we know this model is also the model that's used very often by, say, food delivery drivers and
Correct.
People like that. And that's now being looked at very much in those sectors. What change do you believe is going to come into both the entertainment sector and the wider economy as a result, more generally, of the overall debate, but specifically as a result of this case that you've taken to WRC? Because, as you say, it's been discussed in many places. You've just moved it to a new level.
Yeah. Delivery drivers, there's a special tax arrangement between revenue and delivery drivers since 1998. Now just consider that for a moment. There's also a special tax arrangement between revenue and home tutors. Special tax arrangement between revenue and post for postmasters. We haven't located the one for RTE yet, but over, we're trying to find out. We're trying to find out, is there one, was there one created for the media and entertainment industry? These are special tax arrangements that are created by revenue outside of the law, outside of the legislation. That cannot happen unless the Minister for Finance rubber stamps these. Why are these industries getting that? So that needs to be stamped for the first thing. Second thing is, we do not have legislation defining what an employee is. We have no legislation to govern employment status in Ireland. They do in the UK. They're even looking about changing that at the moment. But we do need employment legislation. We don't need a code of conduct. We don't need anything where revenue or social welfare or anyone else can find a grey area. And to be honest, the legal precedents set down in Carson last year, the five questions, the first three are the most important. They're the filter. That is the setting for our legislation. And Carson also clarified, and it's a very important quote, this was quoted in my case as well, there does not need to be a continuity of service. In effect, a worker engaged to carry out one job, gig or shift will generally be an employee for tax purposes for that one job, gig or shift.
There's a lot of discussion to be had, a lot of legal discussion to be had, and most importantly, as you say, a lot of political discussion to be had by this and the coming government. For the moment, Madam Granahan, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald.